It's time for All Things Northwest with Northwest Missouri State University President, Dr. John Jasinski. Each month, President Jasinski visits with community and educational leaders about exciting developments and collaborations happening throughout our region. Support comes from United Electric Cooperative, Clarinda Regional Health Center, and Atchison Holt Electric. And now, the 10th president of Northwest Missouri State University, Dr. John Jasinski.
Welcome to this month's edition of All Things Northwest, a show devoted to all the good about the people, places, events, and stories of our region. We highlight the great work and the great play, the collaboration, and the developments throughout our region, and we all know there's so much to celebrate regarding Northwest Missouri, Southwest Iowa, Southeast Nebraska, and Northeast Kansas. We here at Northwest Missouri State University and your public radio partners, KXCV, KRNW, trust you're having a pleasant beginning to your spring. I am pleased to welcome you to the March 2015 edition of All Things Northwest. We are focusing this month's program on the Tom Watson-designed junior course at Mazingo Lake Recreation Park, and we're thrilled to have Mr. Tom Watson join us in segment one as we discuss this amazing and inspiring project. In segment two, we'll talk with Dr. Bruce Twaddle, a local dentist who, along with his wife Polly and family, are steadfast community and university supporters. Twaddle planted the seed regarding the Watson Design Junior Course at Mazingo and serves as chair of the local steering committee. Thanks for joining the All Things Northwest team, and we hope you enjoy this month's edition.
This is a shot that he generally plays very well. Just have to say.
Looks good. Looks good.
Do you believe it? Do you? What can you say? Tom Watson pitching into the hole for a birdie and taking the lead in the U.S. Open. One more par and he finally won it.
Tom Watson was born, raised, and still lives in the Kansas City area. His contributions and accomplishments are nothing short of amazing. His charitable work has been impactful. He started the Bruce Edwards Foundation for ALS Research in honor of his longtime caddy. He has assisted the Robert Packard Center for ALS Research at Johns Hopkins University. He's helped raise money for Children's Mercy Hospital, and he's worked in support of our troops through a variety of activities. Watson is a member of the American Society of Golf Course Architects. He's designed over a dozen courses in the U.S. and on three different continents with several projects in process. He also serves as the chairman of the advisory board of the First Tee of Greater Kansas City. That's a youth development program focused on character education. And of course, with leadership in First Tee, Mr. Watson's design expertise, his clear motto of giving back, and his professional golf exploits, these combined have led to the Tom Watson Design Junior Course at Mazingo Lake Recreation Park. Of course, his 45-year golf career oozes legend, four Missouri State Amateur Championships. Since joining the PGA Tour in 1971, he won eight major championships. Only five other players have won more. He's also garnered 39 PGA Tour wins, 71 total professional wins, including three senior British Opens. Six-time PGA Player of the Year, Golfer of the Decade for the 1980s, and part of five Ryder Cup teams. We'll talk with Mr. Watson briefly about his career on today's program, but that will serve as the entree to discuss and focus upon his non-playing exploits and how he is impacting Northwest Missouri quite visibly by taking a personal and immense interest in the Tom Watson Design Junior Course at Mazingo Lake Recreation Park. We're delighted today to be joined by Tom Watson. Tom, we'll talk a little bit about your career. A lot of people know about that career, but we'll talk about the game of golf, your influence on youth, and really the focus on the project here at Mazingo Lake Recreation Park, the Tom Watson Design Junior Golf Course. We're so excited about that. Tom Watson, welcome.
Thank you.
Let's start talking about that career, albeit just briefly here. You're quoted in Golf Digest as saying, from an early age, you knew you wanted to be a golfer. You had a little bit of a ham in you, perhaps, but also, at 14 years of age, you won that Kansas City Match Play Championship.
That's right.
Talk about being a youth, how golf impacted you, and really how golf set the groundwork for your career and what's come after?
Well, my father started me in the game, and that was that's the way most of the professionals got started. They got started with their fathers teaching them the game, and they progressed from there. My dad was a very accomplished player. He was he played in the Missouri Amateur, the National Amateur, and but he had a love for the game and a passion. He was very good. He's a very good teacher, and he didn't suffer bad shots. If I hit a shot close to the hole, say 5 feet from the hole, but it wasn't hit solidly in the club, he said, you hit that in the toe. And so at an early age, I strived to hit that perfect shot in the middle of the club face, that flush shot. In my career, my junior career, I basically played some junior golf in Kansas City under Dan McDougall, the Kansas City Junior Golf Association, which was a fine organization, a bunch of younger people could get around and play different golf courses around Kansas City. And then it progressed where I got to hit the ball a little bit longer, and I decided to try it against the men. And in 13, I played in the Kansas City Medal Play. 14, I played in the Kansas City Match Play and ended up winning that match play. And I said, and I really mean it, that kind of was the jump in my career as a golfer. Up until that time, I loved to play, but I loved to play other sports, football and basketball, loved to hunt. But at that time, in the summer of 1964, it was a very special time because it gave me the dream. It started the dream that maybe someday I could be a pretty good player and play against the likes of my hero, Arnold Palmer, and beat the villain, Jack Nicklaus.
You're 14, and all of a sudden, you make that decision, I'm going to play against the men in that championship. What spurred you to make that decision to say, I'm ready to go against them?
Well, my dad said, son, I think you ought to give it a try. And I did it at age 13, played in the Kansas City Medal Play then, and actually qualified and played in the tournament. But it was playing against better players. I always strive to win. And one of the best ways to get better is to play with people or players who are a lot better than you are and learn from them. And, of course, my dad was a lot better than I was, and the pro of the Kansas City Country Club was Stan Thirsk, and he became a very close confidant and mentor, golf teacher of mine over the years, and he's still here and still a great friend. And so I had a lot of people like that throughout my life and career that helped me get better and helped me do the right things.
You give me an opening. You talked about your hero, Arnold Palmer, the villain, Jack Nicklaus. Just talk about those two a little bit.
Well, when I grew up in the 1958, Arnold Palmer won his first Masters. It was on TV. It's colder than 80s and. In this area at that time of year, and there's Arnold Palmer charging and winning the Masters in 1958. He did it again in 60, 62, and 64. And then Jack started to dominate it and take over Arnold's kingship. And I didn't like that because Arnold was the hero. I was part of Arnie's army. But I grew to really respect Jack and actually tried to emulate his golf swing with Stan at my side. He said, I think you ought to get a little bit more upright and try to work the ball a little bit left to right. And I did, and it was a good change.
Well, we can talk about Snead and Hogan. We can certainly talk about Palmer and Nicklaus and so many others. But, Tom Watson, those major championships, the five, almost that sixth at Turnberry. Which of the majors, which of those wins do you most cherish?
Well, I always wanted to win our National Open, the U.S. Open, the most. It came right as a result of my dad's saying that if you win the National Open, you're a great player. And so I always strived to win the National Open, and fortunately I did. I got a lucky chip, made a lucky chip in the 17th hole in the last round in 1982, and won the National Open then. But I had some other tournaments. I played my best in any major championship was at Turnberry at the British Open, or the Open Championship as they call it, in 1977. And that was I was playing my best golf at that time in 77. I had a great stretch of golf going, and it fell right into place. And that was another watershed moment in my career, because it took me a while to learn how to win. And I lost some terms, so I was called a choker, and rightfully so. I couldn't handle the lead, and I finally got there enough times where I could learn how to deal not only with the pressure, but also how to use strategy to win rather than rely on trying to hit a perfect shot all the time. And that's one thing I learned, that when I first came out, I think, God, I have to play perfectly to make the cut. I had to play perfectly to win a golf tournament. And it was soon, I soon realized after a couple, 2 or 3 years on the tour, watching these players play, the great players like Jack and all the others, Johnny Miller and Trevino and Weisskopf and Miller Barber and a lot of these guys, they didn't play perfect golf. But the one thing they did, they seemed to minimalize their mistakes. And that was something that I had to learn. And also had to learn how to deal with the pressure. In 1977, I came out, I won early a couple of times. Then I lost a tournament, and they say, wow, Watson's still a choker. And then I ended up winning the Masters. And that was just a wonderful experience, and it was terrific to win at Augusta, and always wanted to do that. Probably not as much as the U.S. Open, but at Augusta was very special. And then that summer happened, and when I won at Turnberry in the summer at the British Open, I felt confident that I could play and beat the best players.
And you talked about the National Open, Tom. You mentioned a lucky shot on 17 there.
Was it lucky?
But you said you're going to put it in, and then all of a sudden you go, fast forward 20 years, you're doing instructional videotapes and so DVDs, and what happens there? You do it again. So was it lucky?
It took me a bunch of tries to do it the second time.
Okay. But what a shot that was, and like you say, the National Open really was.
The timing of that shot was pretty good, I have to admit.
That's great. Well, think about Tom Watson walking up the 18th, maybe your final time this summer at St. Andrews. Who knows? Maybe not. What goes through your mind? What's the emotion? What are the emotions that you feel walking up the 18th and certainly this summer that you see at St. Andrews?
Well, like Yogi Berra said, it's deja vu all over again, because in 2010, I thought that was my last time. And I walked across the Swilkin Bridge, St. Andrews. I waved to the crowd. The photographers were there and taking all these shots, and I thought that was my last time. And because of what I did in 2009, they gave me an extension of another 4 years, and then they were kind enough to allow me to have a deja vu experience all over again at St. Andrews this summer in 2015. And so I'm going to do that and walk across the bridge. And I know the feelings I had in 2010 will be maybe magnified even more this time, because this is I know this is probably going to be it, unless I play awfully well and finish in the top 10. That gives me another 5 years, but I don't know whether that's going to happen or not. But I can't tell. But it. I know one thing, going out, playing your last Open Championship at St. Andrews is the way to go out. It's the home of golf. I had the fortune to play with Jack Nicklaus when he walked across that for the last time in 2005. I was crying my eyes out. And here's the greatest player ever played the game, playing his last competitive major championship, and I was lucky enough to be paired with him. And to give him his due, and it was an honor to be with him, and that was a very special moment. So St. Andrews is a very special place for golf. It is the home of the RNA, and when people think about golf courses around the world, if you think about in Europe or the UK, the first course that comes to mind is St. Andrews, and the second course, if you're thinking about the United States, is probably Pebble Beach, maybe Augusta.
Well, I know the world will be watching, and we'll be pulling for you, Tom, in the summer. Listeners, before we move on, you're listening to All Things Northwest on KXCV, KRNW Public Radio. Before we move on in the interview, Tom, let's just talk about a couple of your favorite moments in your career. What comes to your mind?
Well, I think we've already discussed the favorite moments. When I chipped the ball in at Pebble Beach to win the U.S. Open, that was a favorite moment, but I had to confirm. And it was like I made the front end of a one-on-one free throw at the end of the game. I needed to make the second one to win the game. And so I had to play the 18th, the famous 18th at Pebble. And fortunately, I played it okay and no mistakes, and I ended up winning the tournament. The other one was at Turnberry in 1977 at the British Open Championship, and I was playing my best golf, and I had an opportunity to try to beat the best player in the game. And fortunately, a lucky putt went in at the 15th hole on the par 3 from about 50 feet, and it got me tied, and then things happened, and I won it by a shot.
Let's kind of transition and talk about the game of golf. You talk about killing the pig in terms of the swing. Describe that for our listeners.
Well, it's one of the things that about a golf swing, you have to accelerate through. You have to accelerate through and rotate through. And killing the pig was just a euphemism of turning that club head, that toe over it, so you have a pig over here, and in the follow through you hit it, and then you have a nice supply of bacon for a while. And I heard that from somebody, used it, and kind of stuck with me. But Byron Nelson was also a great mentor of mine, and one of the things he said, Tom, I get a question every now and then. I said, what's the one lesson you would give? You only had to give one lesson. What would it be? And Byron said, it would be very simply. You have to learn how to accelerate through the ball. You have to accelerate through the ball to about right there in your follow through. And most people who play the game, they accelerate before they get to the ball, and they're slowing down as they hit it. And you don't hit the ball very far that way.
I think you just described my game actually right there. Well, now you've talked to David Faraday and many others about the changing game, the changing relative to equipment and the number of coaches that players have today, mm-hmm. and so on. You've also talked in a variety of interviews about Sam Snead and kind of keeping it simple. As you think about the game and the changes that we have in front of us, equipment-wise, coaches and all that, what does Tom Watson think about less is more and trying to keep things simple?
Well, whatever works for you is what you're looking for. I know when I started out my quest to become a professional, I told myself one thing: I'm going to work harder than anybody. I'm going to practice harder than anybody to make myself the best I possibly can be. And if it's not good enough, it's not good enough. But at least I will have given it my absolute best. And it's probably the I give my best in all kinds of sports, but I gave even more in golf. And over the years, I practiced hard. There were times when I just got so frustrated. I hated the game. I gave it up for about 6 weeks without touching a club in the late 80s and early 90s. My swing had a fatal flaw in my swing that made me hit the ball off to the right all the time. And I figured it out one time on the practice tee, just where I always figured it out. By keeping my right shoulder a little higher at impact and the shoulders more level going through the ball, and everything fell into place. Simple, simple thought. And ever since that time, the golf swing's been easy. Up until that time, it was always kind of, well, I'll use this method until it doesn't work, then I'll try to find another method. When that doesn't work, I'll try to find another one. But in 1994, on Tuesday at the Heritage Golf Classic at Harbortown, about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I was on the practice sheet trying to find another way to make it work. I kind of went outside the box and thought about Corey Pavin's practice swing. I said, he goes in here, and then he comes right over the top. He makes this big loop. I said, I'm going to make a swing like that because I'm tired of getting stuck and hitting it out there to the right field. I'm going to hit it over the top like this and make the ball go straight left over here. I was hitting a 3-iron, and the first 3-iron hit was absolutely dead solid perfect. The second one was dead solid perfect with this new feeling like this at impact. Third one was a little bit low on the club face, but in the middle. And I said, wow. And I built upon that particular thought, and my golf swing became easy after that.
Well, let's move kind of from a little bit about the career and certainly the game of golf and your swing to Midwest influence, because really that Midwest influence has been pretty pervasive, and it's impacting those of us around Northwest Missouri today. So first, talk about your mom and dad's influence and the values they help instill in you.
Well, my dad's influence on my golf game was paramount. My mom knitted head covers, and she took me places and drove me places. But she couldn't stand to watch me compete because she got too nervous. But my dad, he was the biggest influence on my golf. And I grew up in, you know, we grew up in a middle upper middle class neighborhood. And, but we had chores to do. Cut the lawn and picked the weeds. And took care of the roses and did other things. And you had chores to do all the time. And you did the chores, you could go play. My older brother didn't like it too much because sometimes I'd weasel out of my chores. He had to do the chores while I went to the golf course. But we grew up in a good, loving family with good values, the best things you can do for your children, other than love them and guide them and teach them those values, is to give them a good education. My parents and my family, my relatives, gave me a great education, and I have to say that I didn't put the same effort in the education as I did in golf when I was a junior in college. I have to admit that. I wish I had. But I do know one thing. It was I was privileged to be able to have the education I had. And growing up in this area, we grew up we did a lot of hunting in Kansas and Missouri, especially up here in Mountain City, Missouri. My dad brought me up here in 1957. I had a small pair of waders for me like this, uninsulated, and we went out, and it was 25 degrees. He went out, and he chopped a hole in the ice, shoved the ice under, went to the blind, and here they come. Here come the mallards. And I thought that was the neatest thing in the world. And it didn't matter whether my toes were frozen. I wanted to do that. And from 1957 on, I've been hunting up in Mountain City and enjoying it. It's changed a little bit, but I still get that same wonderful feeling.
Well, we talk about the Midwest influence. We talk about the Kansas City influence. Now you're talking about Mountain City. And then, of course, we can come over into Northwest Missouri. Before I get to Northwest Missouri, I have to ask. You've been on your website, tomwatson.com, and I invite everybody to go there. It's a beautiful website, lots of great information there on tomwatson.com. But the website quotes you as being one of the best foul weather players in the game, giving credit to growing up in Kansas City, playing and practicing in that winter ice and snow. How do foul conditions, bad shots, losses teach us in the game of life? And how have you used those, the foul weather and the losses and all that, how have you used that to help others?
Well, the bad weather wasn't much of an issue because I'd learned how to stay warm when I was hunting. And same thing on the golf course. The main thing is to keep your hands warm and keep your head warm. And wear clothes that you can swing in but stay warm and walk. And we had a bunch of crazy people that liked to play in any type of weather, so we went out and played. So when the weather conditions got bad in the tour, we never played on frozen greens or in snow on the tour, but I played plenty of times here in Kansas City in those types of conditions. But that was pretty easy for me. In fact, a lot of players coming from the warm weather areas, when we did get cold, they struggled with their confidence and and their desire to go out there and compete when the weather is bad. But you know, one of the things that early in my career I had a lot of disappointment, a lot of loss. And I was just trying to learn how to play on the tour. And one of the things that I was told when I first came out here is watch the best players play. So I made it a point to go and watch Jack practice. I had the opportunity to play with him when Sam Snead was still playing in the early 70s when I was playing. So I always stopped what I was doing, practicing. And when Sam came to the practice range, I'd go stand by him and watch him. And invariably, I swung the club better than when I went back to hit my own golf balls. But I also watched how they negotiated golf courses. What did they hit off the tee on this hole? Why didn't they hit driver rather than a shorter club? And then you know the strategy and the risk reward started to make a lot better sense to me, and I learned how to play. And then I had to learn how to win. I had to learn how to deal with the pressure. And those losses were tough. I mean, I had the opportunity to win the U.S. Open before I won any tournament in 1974 at Wingfoot up in New York. Had the lead going in the last round. And here's the tournament I wanted to win the most. And it was the second tournament, actually the third tournament that I had a chance to win since I started the tour in 71. And I get in the last round, I shoot 79. I hit everything out to right field and finished fifth to Hale Irwin. And it was really disappointing, extremely disappointing. It was, you know, and one of the things that happened to that, the silver lining of that dark cloud, after it was over on Sunday, a man by the name of Byron Nelson came up to me on the second floor of the clubhouse and said, "Tom, could I speak with you for just 5 minutes?" Sure.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, sure. And he took me aside in private and he said, "Tom, I really like the way you handle yourself on the golf course. You played a wonderful round yesterday. Today you struggled a little bit. You weren't quite yourself today. And if you would ever like some help with your golf game, I would love to try to help you." And I said, "Wow." He said, "Come on down to Roanoke, Texas, to my ranch, and we'll stay there. And we'll go out to the golf course and practice and work on it." I took him up on it a couple years later. And ironically, the following year, I had my breakout year in 1977. But to learn how to win came at the expense of a lot of defeats. And the way I looked at it, and I guess it's been the way, I guess maybe I've operated, the way I've responded to defeat. After that Wingfoot loss in 74, 2 weeks later I won my first tournament, the Western Open in Chicago. The following year, I had the 36-hole lead in the U.S. Open at Medina. And a month later, I won the British Open, first time I'd ever been over there, and I won the British Open in Carnoustie. And you know, when I've been playing the game over the years, I have a bad hole. Almost invariably, I'll have a good hole to try to make up for it, to get me back to even. I don't know, it's just part of my makeup, my psyche. It's worked for me. I don't expect it to work. I'm not expecting to have a good hole, but maybe it's that RA that my dad used to say whenever I had a bad hole. That he called it RA. It was called red ass. that made me mad and made me perform better. But I do know one thing, that from defeat, I learned a lot. It's like Bobby Jones said, you never learn anything in victory. You learn a lot in defeat. And one of the things in defeat, what you do, you go to the practice tee and you recreate the shots that you didn't do well, that you played poorly. And you recreate those things and make it right and do it right. And so the next time you come up with that shot in the situation, you have the confidence that, yeah, I can do it right. And it wasn't just a matter of pressure. It was just there's a bad swing like this. I'll make a good swing this time and I'll do it right. And that's in my first tournament in the Western Open on Sunday. That's what happened. I made an 8 on the 14th hole on Saturday, and put myself way behind the lead on Sunday. Came to the 14th hole, and I made a three. It's the toughest hole in the golf course. I made a birdie, and that propelled me on to victory. And so I made up for it.
We're talking with Tom Watson right here on All Things Northwest. You're listening to KXCB KRNW.
Support for KXCV KRNW comes from Clarinda Regional Health Center. CRHC proudly offers joint management from physician consultation, education, physical therapy, and non-surgical treatments to total knee replacement. More information on CRHC's programs, services, and healthcare providers can be found at clarindahealth.com. Support for KXCV KRNW comes from Atchison and Holt Electric Cooperative, providing power to members in Northwest Missouri and Southwest Iowa. Atchison Holt Electric reminds you to be safe this planting season by knowing the locations of power lines and keeping farm equipment at least 10 feet away. More information is at ahec.coop.
You're listening to All Things Northwest here on KXCV KRNW. I'm your host, John Jasinski, here with golf legend Tom Watson. Talking golf, but Tom, you've kind of taken that golf career and kind of morphed it into a golf course design career. And, you know, if we can talk a little bit about your, how you got into golf course design, and what are some of your golf course design principles?
Well, I started golf course design when I was in fourth grade. I was 9 years old. I loved to draw. I drew pictures of quail and ducks and golf courses. And I don't know if you remember the old golf magazine, Fantasy Holes, where they drew illustrations of these fantasy holes through the redwoods, through these giant redwoods, just a little small opening, and there's a green on that side where they're. I did the same thing. I drew impossible golf holes and golf courses and loved to do it. But frankly, just about any golfer who plays the game with any regularity is a golf course designer in his own head or her head. I don't like this hole, man. The reason I don't like it is that mound right there shouldn't be there. Or that needs something right there. That needs a bunker there. Or that green is too severe right here. That needs to be softened. Or we need to do something. Every golfer is kind of like that. And I've always had the desire to build golf courses. And I had the opportunity to do a couple of holes at the Kansas City Country Club early on in my career. And then I was asked by Bobby Jones Jr. along with Sandy Tatum to do a golf course called the Links at Spanish Bay for Pebble Beach Company on the coast in Monterey. And that was my first go. And that was a learning experience. And I learned again at Shadow Glen in Kansas City and Olathe in Kansas City. And then I went out on my own, did some courses in Japan and came to America and started doing some courses in America. And presently, I have a golf course in London I'm doing, which is a wonderful project. I'm looking forward to finishing that up here in 2016. And so it's I don't do very many golf courses at a time. Maybe most of it we had going on is two. I like to service them. I like to go out. I like to make sure that the golf course is in the vision that I had. And if my vision is wrong, somebody else can prove it to me that's wrong, I'll make a change.
California, Kansas City, Japan, London, Maryville, Missouri. Your first meeting Dr. Bruce Twaddle and his companions. What went through your head as you're coming up and talking about a youth course at Mazingo Lake Recreation Park?
Well, I saw it after, and we basically had a route plan. My design associate, Bob Gibbons, had already been up here and had done a walkthrough and kind of laid out what he thought would be a pretty good short golf course up here. And the whole idea was to give the players, especially young players, a chance to play and learn the game on a golf course that just doesn't beat you up as far as length or difficulty is concerned, but it allows you to try to make pars and get some real satisfaction out of scoring. And this golf course that we eventually finished and now it's growing in, is going to be that golf course. I look at it not only as a course for junior players, but course for people like me when I'm maybe about 10 years older to be able to go out and play and make some pars and some par fours where I can reach the green in two, because I'm getting shorter and shorter, and these regulation professional courses are getting a little long for me.
What ultimately, why did Tom Watson say yes to this Mozinga Lake Recreation Park, Tom Watson designed junior golf course? What was the yes moment?
John, what I see in the game of golf right now is not pretty. I think that we are struggling to create new golfers in our game. And I think a lot of it has to do with the electronic social media age that we're in right now. The people, the young people of today spend an enormous amount of time in their social media and various things that they do. They don't have time to do much of anything else. You know, they go to school, come out, social media. Sports are suffering. Not only golf, but other sports are suffering to having participants. And, you know, our country is, frankly, it's obese. We have too many people sitting around not playing. We don't go out and play. We don't have our kids. You know, we had the luxury when I was a kid to go out and play on the block. Mom said, get out of here. Come back when I ring the bell. We had an old train bell. And, you know, when it's time for dinner, bang, bang. You could hear it all through the neighborhood. And, okay, we got to get home. But nowadays, everything is pretty well structured. And all these activities that we had as a kid, you know, we played from one sport to another sport to another sport. And now parents are kind of focusing or channeling their kids into one sport only. And, you know, kids get burnt out a little bit in that sport. But then you add on top of that the social media aspect, the time that it takes them. And I'm not saying it's bad, but I know one thing, that we have to compete with that in golf. And golf is a tough sport to learn. You don't get instant gratification with golf. You have to be taught from the beginning how to hold on to the club the right way and how to stand up to the ball with the right posture, and then make an arm swing. You know, let your body follow your arm swing there, and let your arms go through and finish with your belly button to the hole. And it's pretty simple, but you know, there's some more athletic kids than others, and some people get it easier than others. And it takes time to develop yourself as a golfer, as a youngster, or anybody actually starting the game, to a point of proficiency where you can actually go out and really have some fun at it and get some feedback and hit the shots and hit a shot that really, or a series of shots that makes it worthwhile. Makes you want to come back. And you know, we need that time right there to teach the kids, and they'll do that here at Mozinga. I know that. You know, we created an arena for them, but it's basically the people around us, the parents of these kids, most importantly, the teachers. Next important, but the parents have to understand that, you know, this is a wonderful facility. It gets the kids, as my parents used to say, keeps the kids out of the pool halls. In fact, I love pool, though. I used to take any opportunity to play pool, but I fear for the game that we're not creating new golfers, and this facility is a place where we can do that. You know, it gives the opportunity to teach the game at an early level in the game that will create lifetime golfers. My whole point here, through the first tee organizations, through Kids on Course, to all sorts of different other programs, to try to get the kids to love the game enough where they want to continue to play it when they get older. And that's the most important thing to me. It used to be you just let it happen, but now we can't let it happen because it's not happening enough, and we have to really focus on how to do it, how we're going to inspire these kids to come out and play golf.
Well, I know there's so many people who are so deeply appreciative of you taking that initiative, and I know Dr. Bruce Twaddle was talking to me and talked to you about North Berwick in Scotland. That was an exciting moment for him because as he went over there and played golf, he saw this youth course, and the course was for children, but there was a sign that said, it's for adults too, but just under the supervision of children. And
you got the point across.
Indeed. And then we talk about the Watson-designed Mazingo Lake Recreation Park Junior course, and we've got a course that's pretty prolific. Explain for us, what are some of those unique features, the special properties that you were able to design into it? Because you talk about in your design principles, you use the land as your guide.
Well, the land here is it basically fell down from one side into a watershed area, a creek, and a beautiful creek, and then went up on the other side like this. So we had to design it to kind of filter around this the creek all the way to all nine holes. We started off with a very short par three right off the bat where you could just dribble it off the tee and almost get on the green. So you get some instant success. Bobby Jones Jr. said, St. Andrews starts, where I'm playing my final British Open this year. It starts off with a handshake at number one, a very easy hole, and it ends with a handshake, a very easy finishing hole. But you better know how to play those other 16 holes. So we start off with a handshake on the golf course, and then the golf course has some dogleg lefts, dogleg rights, that has some uphill shots, there's some downhill shots, and it's got a lot of variety as far as elevation is concerned. It's got a few bunkers on it. I didn't want to put too many bunkers on it. I can't remember exactly how many bunkers on there. I should know, but I think there's three or four, maybe four or five, something like that total. And at the end, we created a nice practice green, a nice big practice green with quite a bit of contour to it, and a practice bunker, and an area around which you can really start somebody in the game. And as Ben Crenshaw was starting the game by Harvey Pinnick, Harvey said, all right, he saw this little kid like this, all right, here's what I want you to do, Ben. I want you to take your chipping club and a putter. I want you to go off the green. I want you to chip the ball to the hole and then go putt the ball in the hole. And Ben said he just did that time after time after time again. He was the best chipper and putter there ever was. But the whole idea was that's the game. You got to finish and put the ball in the hole. You know, many times we get out and we get on the practice team, we talk about the golf swing and we try to swing and hit the ball in the air. But when you're on a golf course, we don't hit from level lies on the golf course. We all have different lies that you have to learn how to hit from those types of lies. And so and there are quite a few of those lies here at the Mazingo nine-hole the short course here. And that's what I intended to do is give the kids opportunity to play lots of different golf shots, but not too difficult golf shots.
And so as you think about this course here, obviously the design perhaps has changed over time. What kind of opportunities or obstacles did you guys find in the design, the layup to the beginning? How has it changed over time from your design early on to today?
Well, with the help of Rick Boylan, who has donated a lot of his time and money, actually, to be the construction arm of this project, and Bob and others, we didn't change it a whole lot. Usually in the field, sometimes things happen. We had a band of sand that we had to deal with, and went through the eighth fairway and had to deal with that and how it affected the ninth green underneath. You never know what's going to happen until you get in the earth. And fortunately, we have a very very environmental friendly golf course as far as drainage is concerned, because everything drains down toward this creek, and so you don't have to put a lot of underground drainage that you do on flat golf courses to get the water off when you have the heavy rains. But those are the things that the average golfer don't know about. They go out and they're looking at the greens and where the flags are, and they're just hoping, and many of them are just hoping to get it airborne. But the golf course is going to be a friendly golf course, but it has variety to it. It's not just straight back and forth and back and forth. The greens are all a little bit different, and it's going to be a fun golf course. I can't wait to play it myself.
Well, we can't wait to have you up here. And by the way, I know that you've made personal visits up here to kind of make sure that the course is coming along. Thank you very much for doing that. How might this Mazingo course, the Watson Design course here, inspire other communities? Because you talk about the game of golf and the need for youth to get acclimated early on, have parents, teachers, and so on be part of this. But how can this be inspirational to other communities nationally and even internationally?
Well, this is not the first one I've done. Actually, the first one I participated in was a three-hole golf course at the Blue River Golf Course in Swope Park in Kansas City. And you know, we took an existing three holes of a nine-hole course that they had there and basically designated for junior golfers. It was just three short holes, two par fours and a short par three. And so that young people could go and just play around and around and around. And you know, adults are welcome, but under the supervision of the youngsters there as well. That was the whole premise of those three holes, and it's worked pretty well. And I see when I'm over in England, Scotland, and Ireland, but especially Scotland, you see a number of these facilities for the youngsters. You don't have to have much. All you have to do is have a short flag and a cup, and the grass is usually short enough where you can putt and you can create your own golf courses. And they've done that in a lot of different places over there for the youngsters who, you know, when you don't hit the ball very far, you don't play the long course. You play a short course like that. You can go around and around and around it, and finally, God, maybe I'd like to try the big course one day. And that's what we're trying to do here. Get them started, get success, get them started right with the right fundamentals with the program, say the first tee program, or the junior golf program here, and then get them started and make them fall in love with it. Allow them to fall in love with it, not make them, but allow them to fall in love with it. And they're going to be constant players in the big course here.
What excites you most about the course here, the junior course?
Well, what excites me is the number of kids that are going to participate. You know, 150 or so kids are going to be participating in this, and that's wonderful. And that gives them a place to go in the summer. Yeah. One of the things it keeps you out of the pool hall statement. Yeah, you don't get in too much trouble when you're on a golf course. You really don't. Yeah, there's not too much trouble you can get into.
Well, and you talk about the first tee and the foundation, certainly, and the core values, and not getting in trouble on a golf course, but the core values that are brought out as golfers go through life on a golf course. Talk about those core values and how they'll help youth become better golfers, but better people, better contributors to their communities.
Well, yeah, I go back to my first junior lesson when I was at the Kansas City Country Club. I've already been taught by my dad the fundamentals of the game and how to swing the golf club, but also the what they call the etiquette, or kind of the rules. How do you kind of stand around? What do you do when you're playing golf? And there was a junior program taught by Paul Weiler at the Kansas City Country Club. And he had all different ages of kids, from, I can't remember how old I was, it may have been eight or something like that. And we show up it was a Thursday morning, real early, that was the junior golf day. And I had my bag out and was ready to go play and all that. And Paul said, all right, everybody, grab a chair, grab a seat here. We got to do something. And he went in to teach how to play, what the etiquette of the game was, not how to play the game. What do you do? You know, you don't yell in somebody's backswing. You replace a divot, you rake the bunkers. Then you start talking a little bit about the rules. You know, what do you do if you hit it in a water hazard? You know, what do you do? And you know, there's all kinds of different options. He basically kind of taught us this is where you stand so you don't get hurt. Somebody hit you, bean you in the head with a golf club. And unfortunately, over my career, I've never been hit by a golf club except once. I got hit in the butt by this golfer coming out of a bunker. There's no way he could get the ball where I was. I was way off to the side, not looking, and all of a sudden I hear, "Far!" And I turn away from him and bend over, and two bounces hit me right in the butt. And that was the only time that I've ever been hit by a golf ball. But you know, you learn, you know, you don't want to be too far ahead of them. You know, these are the types of things you teach the kids. And so that's part of the thing. And that was the very first lesson we had. And then after that, it was, okay, this is what we want you to do as far as the grip and swing and pitching to the golf bag over here is a target and things like that. It was the right way to start.
Well, the hundreds of kids that will start going through the Watson Design course here at Mazingo Lake Recreation Park will be just the beginning. I know that Dr. Bruce Twaddle, the steering committee that he had, his friends that were around him, the good folks here at Mazingo, Ron and Kyle, city leaders, Northwest Missouri State University foundations, private citizens stepping up to help support the course, Orville Haywood and his beautiful gift. What does that tell you about a community like Maryville?
Well, they want to, first of all, it tells you that there are some golfers in this community, that they love the game. And you know, I think they share my same vision about the game. We want to give the kids the opportunity to learn, love, and play golf for the rest of their lives. Golf is, you know, very simply, it's a game of a lifetime. You can play golf from, yeah, when you're 6 years old until you're 96 years old. I've got a good friend, Sandy Tatum, out in California. He's the president of the United States Golf Association. He's 94 years old. He still goes out and plays. And he doesn't play that much well anymore, but he still has that passion to go out and hit that dead, solid, perfect two iron. Now, nobody hits a two iron anymore, but Sandy's got a two iron in his bag. And he still has that passion. Okay, I've got to, you know, when the situation arises for a two iron, takes it out, and he should be hitting a two hybrid, if anything, the easier club to hit. And that's the passion that you hope that you can inspire these young people, these young kids, to have through a program that we have here at Mazingo.
We're talking with Tom Watson right here on All Things Northwest. You're listening to KXCV KRNW.
Support for KXCV KRNW comes from United Electric Cooperative, providing power to members in Missouri and Iowa. United Electric reminds you to be safe this planting season by knowing the location of power lines and keeping farm equipment at least 10 feet away. More information is at UECI.coop.